there was a huge demonstration in Budapest. People are really outraged. It doesn't really happen often in Hungary that opposition-minded people can gather like hundreds of thousands of crowds. So you saw that there is something, there is a crack, and this hopelessness could be turned into something. Now here comes Péter Magyar, and he gives an interview.
Follow the money. This is a podcast of the investigative newsroom, Follow the Money. I'm your host, Emma du Chassinier, and as always, I'm joined by Alexander Fanta in Vienna. Next month, Hungarians are heading to the polls. And that could spell the end of Viktor Orban's long-term grip on power. Viktor Orban and his Fidesz party have ruled Hungary for 16 years. And during that time, he's really gotten under Brussels' skin. He's been blocking sanctions on Ukraine, and Brussels constantly clashes with Orban over standards of democracy. But now, Viktor Orban has a challenger. Out of nowhere, Péter Magyar emerged and is likely to win the Hungarian elections. To figure out who Péter Magyar really is and what his potential victory could mean for Hungary and for Europe, Follow the Money journalist Lisa Witteman, Leonie Kiewski, and Lisanne van Vught teamed up with Hungarian journalist Patrick Galavitz. And joining us today is Patrick, who will take us through all the ins and outs of Péter Magyar. Hi, Patrick. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, guys. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with this big bomb that recently dropped about Péter Magyar. Péter Magyar told the press that a sex tape allegedly involving him could soon be released. What is that sex tape about?
Well, it just shows the madness of the Hungarian campaign right now, the political campaign. There was a website that just came out of the blue. There is nothing on this website except one picture which shows a room with a bed. And
just a room and a bed, no people in there.
Yes, yes. And then somehow the propaganda, the Fidesz propaganda started to spread the noise that, okay, what we will see here is some kind of a sex tape involving Péter Magyar, featuring Péter Magyar. And a few days later, Magyar had the feeling that he has to react to it somehow. And he posted a video message where he admitted that he actually was in that flat. He was invited there by his ex-girlfriend, Evelyn Fogel. And when he entered the flat, he saw several people. He saw in the flat things that looked like substances, so illegal drugs, but he didn't use anything there. And then he just later went into the room with his former girlfriend, Evelyn, and they had sex there. That's it. I don't know. I feel very weird when I'm talking about the campaign. And then we are talking about an alleged sex tape and you know, about the sex life of politician instead of, you know, what he wants to do with this country.
Well, and we are, of course, not making you talk about the sex life of politicians for no reason, because in this case, this video seems to be very much used as propaganda against him, right?
Absolutely. But he says that on this tape, it is only him and his former girlfriend, you know, and if it is true, then I don't know how they could blackmail with him with this, because then it's just not something that would, you know, could harm his chances or anything.
And for people that don't follow the Hungarian politics closely, what's good to know about that? Who is Péter Magyar in this whole political landscape? And what are sort of the two camps that are fighting against each other right now?
So Fidesz is the governing party, governing for 16 years now in a row. There's the party of Viktor Orban. The other party is the so-called Tisza party, which is now led by Péter Magyar, who just emerged 2 years ago. And these are the two big blocks now. Okay, first of all, let's start with the government and Viktor Orban. He's now prime minister for 16 years. For the first 10-12 years of his tenure, he was very successful, especially in the 2010s. Also, you saw a very strong Hungarian economy. And quality of life in Hungary was getting better and better in the 2010s. Everybody had the feeling that, okay, from one year to another, I'm doing better. Then during the COVID, that has changed. After COVID, there was high inflation, very high inflation. There, you could see that that the people didn't really have anymore the feeling that, okay, I'm doing better and better from year to year. And from that time on, you had the feeling that that people have concerns. People don't really trust anymore that their future can be better.
And so in this context, with Orban losing trust, someone stood up quite unexpectedly, and that's Peter Magyar that you wrote about. But that actually starts with another scandal in 2024. What is that scandal about, and why does it matter so much?
So 2 years after this historic win of Orban, comes this article that reveals that the then president, Katalin Novák, pardoned a guy who was involved covering up a pedophile crime. There was a child care facility where this guy was working. And there, the leader of this child care facility was abusing children for years. And he was convicted for this. And for whatever reason, Katalin Novák pardoned him. Okay, there's this article which is published. And somehow you saw that was very interesting. But you saw, because you rarely see Fidesz panicking. But in that moment, you saw them.
How did you see that? Like, what made you realize they were panicking?
That they had to react to this, and then they couldn't just dismiss it with the regular things that, okay, it's just fake news or whatever.
Yeah. No. So normally, if a scandal happens, it's like, oh, whatever, it's fake news.
Yes. Mm. The president had to react to it. Ultimately, 1 week after this was published, she stepped down. But also, Orban had to react to it in a video statement that, okay, now this is very scandalous and it's unacceptable. And you see that there is a crack somehow. And there was a huge demonstration in Budapest after this scandal. People are really outraged. It doesn't really happen often in Hungary that opposition-minded people can gather like hundreds of thousands of crowds. So you saw that there is something, there is a crack, and this hopelessness could be turned into something. And now here comes Peter Magyar, who just decided out of the blue that he goes into the independent YouTube channel studio called Partisan, and he gives an interview. At that time, he was not very well known. He presented himself as a new person who is very outraged by how the government handled this scandal, the pardon scandal. He was outraged because how the government treated the women in this story. Peter Magyar said that he had the feeling that the government tries to push the blame on these two women when there are more problems, that the problems are broader than that. And that's what he was talking about in that interview at Partisan. This interview just quickly gathered over 1 million views. It is now over 2 million views. It is
even though at the time he was not really known.
Magyar, nobody knew who this guy was. And you know, this interview quickly reaches 1 million views. It is now over 2 million views. It is a huge number in Hungary. We are just a country of less than 10 million with a very isolated language. So if a video is seen on YouTube on YouTube by 2 million people, it practically means that everybody saw it. Like, let's say, or everybody heard about it at least.
Yeah.
It's a huge thing. And then, shortly after he held his first political gathering, he was able to amass, a pretty huge, number of people, of a few thousand already, which was a pretty big number considering how inexperienced he was, how out of the blue he came. And after that, all thing just set in motion. After that, he decided that he will run on the EP elections that year. and also
the European Parliament elections.
European Parliament elections, and on the EP elections, on the European elections, his party became the second largest party officially. Wow. Because he then reached like almost 30% of the votes.
So out of the blue, Peter Magyar was really parachuted into this TISA party, parachuted into the European Parliament as well. And to better understand who he also is as a person and as a politician, you spoke to many different people for your article, but you also spoke to Peter Magyar himself. What was he like? How did he come across to you?
Well, he is what I can see. And again, we met, I had the feeling that he's really a professional politician. He always knows what the perfect answer is and how to frame things. He has his story in his head that he's able to tell anytime.
But when you met him, was there any single moment where you thought like, you know, there's a crack in the surface, there's where the real personality is shining through?
Yes, there was. When I was asking, for example, about how activists of other political parties probably helped him in the beginning. You could see that was, for example, a touchy subject for him because he wants to project himself as someone completely new. But you could see that he was, okay, he was then getting frustrated and he said that, okay, it has no relevance and whatever. So
he would tell you that your questions didn't have relevance.
Yeah. It's like, you know, that's when you feel that when a politician gets frustrated that, okay, that's a good question now.
Yeah.
By the way, he also commented to our article when we published it.
What did he say?
He's not satisfied with the outcome. Well,
he said, what did he not like about it? Yeah.
He wrote that this article is just full of things that are like lies. Yeah, he basically criticized our work that it wasn't, we didn't go deep enough or anything. That was it.
Was that a compliment for you, the fact that he said that it was nonsense?
Well, you know, as an investigative journalist, if a politician who you are writing about likes your article, that's not a good sign.
Not a good sign.
So I was like, okay, well, it's probably a good article.
And so in Hungary, he was very much this newcomer, but at this point, he has also, of course, been in Brussels at the European Parliament for the past 2 years. And what's the sentiment around him there? Is he seen as this like potentially pro-EU leader that's going to bring Hungary back into the fold again?
Yes, and I think they are not wrong about it. There are certain expectations regarding this election in Hungary, also in Western Europe and in other European countries. Hungary would definitely change its stance on the EU, on the Western alliance in general. But it's not necessarily because Magyar will be so friendly to the EU necessarily, but because Orbán is built down this relationship and destroyed this relationship to laws that were earlier unwritten. Yeah. You know,
it cannot got any worse, basically.
Yes, it would be very difficult, you know, because what Magyar is now promising is that we would stop with the veto politics. We would try to negotiate about.
So when you say veto politics, could you explain a little bit more what you mean by that?
Veto politics is that what we saw by Orbán in the recent years, that whenever he doesn't like something, he doesn't try to negotiate with the partners, with the other countries, but he says that, okay, I'm just going to veto this decision, and then you cannot go forward with that.
Yeah.
And that's bad for everyone. And we just don't care that we cannot move forward because we are not going to allow this because it's against our interests or whatever. By the way, it happens very often when the topic is about Russia.
Yeah.
And if Magyar already promises that he wouldn't just threat with a veto at every single EU decision, that would be probably already a big step for the Commission and for the Parliament. Yeah. And for the EU bureaucracy in general, that's what probably they feel in Brussels, and they are probably right about this.
But this idea that it's like pivotal between, you know, whatever Orbán represents, you know, aligning closer to Russia and maybe to other countries, turning away from the EU, and then, you know, Magyar is seen as being kind of more pro-EU and pro-NATO. Is that actually true in that dark sense, or is that maybe a bit overhyped?
It's really hard to predict what he would do once he would actually become a prime minister. He's just talking in very vague terms that, you know, Hungary has to align again with the Western alliance. We belong to the Western world and not to the Russian world. These are indications.
So is he really this big EU lover that Brussels wants him to be?
If you look at his interviews, not only the one that he gave to us, to our article, but also other interviews, lengthy interviews where he was talking about Brussels and the European Union, I think the word that comes to my mind about him is that he is disillusioned about the EU, in the sense that he knows that it is a big peace project where it is essential for countries to cooperate. And that that the EU is probably a very nice idea, but it's more like a huge bureaucracy. It's a big political game that you have to work in the background. So I think he's disillusioned about this. And he certainly knows how things work in Brussels and in Strasbourg.
But does Tisa's voting record in Brussels tell us anything about the party, about its priorities?
I think it's very, it's also very interesting. So they were not always aligned with the European People's Party, especially on the touchy domestic topics on Ukraine.
Yeah, which is the party that they're, the larger party that they're part of within the European Parliament.
Yes, the European People's Party indeed. But the thing is that if he would vote on something like, let's say, sending weapons to Ukraine, how we should support Ukraine or whatever, the Fidesz propaganda would turn that against him, and they would just say that, okay, he's a warmonger, just like every other Western Europeans who wants a war with Russia, and then they will spend our taxpayers' money on Ukraine, and this is just wrong. So when they are cautious about how they are voting in the European Parliament on touchy subjects, especially again Ukraine and migration, which are the two biggest topics for Fidesz.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is less about how they are actually thinking about these topics, but it is a cautious stance to not to be attacked by Fidesz at home, because then they can turn this against us.
Just on that note, you know, because talking about the kind of enduring domestic influence of Orban. I just talked to a German reporter the other day who's covering Hungary, and she reminded me of the fact that, you know, Orban over the last few years, you know, placed a lot of loyalists in the institutions. Large parts of the economy are run by people close to Orban, including a lot of news outlets. So, you know, even if Magyar was to take power, is it even still possible to deinstall the Fidesz software from the Hungarian computer?
Good question. The best question that everyone asks here, actually, because on one hand you see that this system that Orban has built up seems to be very solid. You have these oligarchs that became rich from EU funds practically and by taxpayers' money. Yes, it's solid, and it can remain also solid after. Let's say Magyar wins the elections, and then it could be a big obstacle for his governance. On the other hand, it's also very unpredictable, because these institutions and these people are now very loyal to Orban. But why are they loyal? Because he's prime minister. How will these people, these currently loyal people, feel when Orban is not in power anymore? But at the same time, yes, it's a legitimate concern that here are now all these institutions. And these are now very loyal to the Fidesz party.
Yeah.
And it is what Orban has built up. How will they react after Orban would lose an election? We just don't know.
We are also talking about an environment where in the past years, the press freedom has really been limited. It's very, very constricted. You are a reporter in that environment. I'm wondering if in all your years of critical reporting, does it ever feel scarier for you to dive into topics like these?
No. I mean, how I look at it, and okay, I'm in general, I'm an optimistic person. You could probably interview other Hungarian journalists, then they would see this situation more dire. And of course, it's not very good. At the same time, it gives me the feeling that, you know, our work in this, in an environment like this, is just, it just makes our work more important and more, more crucial. Because if we would live in a healthy democratic society, let's say, the public broadcaster would do its job and it wouldn't be a propaganda channel. But this makes our work more crucial. But at the same time, yes, you are right. It's not an ideal environment, but it is just something that you have to accept and you have to figure it out for yourself how you want to work in this. And our answer to this challenge is that we work just as the same as it was a healthy democracy. We do the same journalistic work. We are not becoming activists. We are not campaigning for anyone. It's not the media's job to contribute to political changes.
Yeah. Well, that's my very final question. You said you're an optimistic guy. There's this optimism in Brussels that Magyar might be this perfect new Brussels ally. Your article has shown that there's a lot of nuances to that idea. Are you optimistic about the future of your country as well?
Oh my God. No, honestly, I think that it's what we are in is a very, very difficult situation. Whoever wins the elections in April, they will inherit a mess, an economical mess, a mess in the society, in the people, in the head of the people, and it's going to be an uphill battle to whoever wins. If Orbán stays, it's going to be very difficult for him to. If Magyar wins, it will be very difficult for him to. Am I optimistic about the future of Hungary? I have to be, because at the same time, if you look at our history, this country survived so many things, and it is compared to other things like the Ottoman occupation in our history, or the Mongol invasion, or the Soviet invasion, or the Second World War, the First World War, the Trianon Treaty, whatever. Those are all huge tragedies, but somehow the Hungarians are still here. So I think we're gonna figure this out too.
Yeah.
No worries. We're gonna remain here.
I think that's a very good message to wrap up the episode with. Thank you so much, Patrick. It was very nice talking to you. Thank you, Alex. And
thank you,
good luck soon for another episode. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
You've listened to the podcast of Follow the Money. Our watchdog journalism is funded by our members. Subscribe and support European investigative journalism.